Church. Would you help me welcome Mark Crocker? Mark Crocker.
There you go.
Wow. That's kind of you. Thank you. Thank you very much. I've just had a fantastic day yesterday with your staff and council. It was just such an incredible opportunity to come up. I want to say thanks to everyone for participating on such a beautiful Saturday afternoon. I mean, it's tough to come into, you know, to listen to a guy you don't know for several hours on a Saturday afternoon, especially yesterday. And so we had just a great time. We were just talking about mission and trying to understand the mission of Christ and understand the past mission of this church, understand where we are at present, and the exciting part of where we could go, what's open, what's available, where the next steps are going to be. And I know that Pastor Evan is going to be sharing those things with you over the next little while. I'll be excited to kind of see how that rolls out for you as you begin this next new part of your journey. Well, hi, I'm Mark. I live in Victoria. But I get to do mission all around the world. My office is my computer and Skype, and so I'm constantly working with people that are training, preparing, and engaging in mission everywhere around the planet. I've had the opportunity now for about 25 years to train 25,000 people in mission. Gone to about 45 different nations, and I remember my first journey was from the UK to the Ukraine right after the Iron Curtain kind of started to open up in 1991. So for those trying to figure out my age, that gives you some clues. So, it was just an amazing, amazing moment, that opening of the Iron Curtain. I mean, I remember listening to my Walkman pushing a lawnmower. Yeah, I'm giving you clues here, yeah. Pushing a lawnmower that summer thinking, This Soviet bloc, this place I'd known all my life as a place of separation, as a place that there was no way for me to engage, was suddenly becoming wide open. And I went through with a team of 50 people on a bus. I mean, the border guards didn't even know what to do with us. They had not seen this before. And we came through. I mean, we couldn't spend money. There's nothing to spend money on while we were there. It was just brand new. It was months after it opened up. Changed my life in amazing and incredible ways. And this is a story, part of my story is the story of the kingdom of God, which is the story of meeting a stranger and connecting with someone that we do not know. Anyone here ever had a neighbor move in next door? Yeah, it's a bit scary, isn't it? I mean, you just don't know. Yeah, I remember a few years ago in Victoria, I live in Victoria, the house beside us went up for sale. And I started watching the realtors drop by and who was coming. And, you know, there's some people you're thinking, no, I don't really want them moving in. And then there's this couple, I saw them out there and I thought, oh, they look interesting. And so I went outside and pretended to do some yard work. And she caught my eye, I caught her eye, and you know, we kind of, hey, how you doing? And she asked me a few questions, and I answered a few questions. And they became Frank and Megan, my next-door neighbors, for the past 8 years. They have kids sort of similar to the age of my kids. We needed to rebuild the fence, and so we put a secret gate in between us. They're moving this month. And it's like, oh, who are the next folks going to be? Are they going to be any good? Are we going to have backyard barbecues anymore? We just don't know. Hey, what do you do when someone moves into the neighborhood? Are you the kind of person that bakes the pie and knocks on the door? Few of you are. I mean, yeah, I would hope. Some of you are probably like me, right? You pretend you're doing yard work. You head outside, and maybe if you catch your eye, you can say hi. Some of you, well, you know who you are. You're a bit antisocial. You ignore them at best, right? It's this introduction, this sense of introductions and strangers and meetings today that I want to talk about. Because my job is a lot about introductions. Over the years, as I mentioned, I've taken people all around the planet to connect with people in different locations. And usually when I go into a new country, I'll visit a spiritual center there. So it might be it might be a cathedral, or it might be a mosque, or it might be a Hindu temple. And I'll walk in and I'll get to know this place from their spiritual stories. Some people, when I bring them into those places, they're concerned. They're concerned about oppression and darkness and being infected by this unhealthy spiritual presence. Remember one occasion I went into a Hindu temple, but it was in Canada. I was training a group of people in Calgary at the time, and local guide I went in with, he was extremely kind, and he started to explain the beliefs of Hindus, and I learned a lot from him. See, I'd grown up my entire life hearing that Hindus believed in 300 million gods. Have you heard that? Well, he said to me, that's not true. He said that they believe in one God. Has 300 million different understandings and ramifications and realities of this one God. I thought, well, that's interesting. It's actually a point of connection in between us and a point of conversation that I'd never realized before, because I also believe in one God. And as we went through this time with our guide, he joked and laughed with us. He answered a question. At the end of our time, he concluded by offering each of us a fresh apple. Now, I felt the tension from the people in the group. Because moments before, our guide had explained that part of their religious practice was to offer food to the representatives of the god, to idols. And so he had taken this bowl of apples and he had placed it in front of this idol here. And then a few minutes later, it was almost like just casually, he went and grabbed the bowl and brought it back and started like passing out apples. It's like, you know, Halloween treats or something. You could feel the tension in the group because suddenly the group, well, it was like someone had just walked out of a gas station washroom and reached into their back pocket and grabbed a handful of trail mix. And you hadn't heard the water flush. I was handing it out. There was a sense of like, I'm good, thanks. But I wanted to respect his time, and so I accepted the apple. And all of these other people who had just accepted the apple, they were kind of like waiting there. What do we do? Do we offend this person who's been so kind to us, or do we offend our conscience? So in the end, I took a bite. The others waited a minute, see if there's any smiting going on, you know. That seemed okay, and so they took a bite too. How do we interact with people that are so different than us? How do we understand the stranger? Because meeting the stranger can be a complicated process. Often when we think about a stranger, it's someone that we know about, but it's not someone that we know. And Canadians, we like to meet new people. We're good at traveling, and we also know that new people are coming in every single day, every single year. Refugees are coming in. The Syrian refugees are here. And there's a celebration for many of this Canadian brand of acceptance. But there's also a sense of concern. How do we interact, and how do we welcome this person who is not us, this Muslim, this person wearing this niqab? Anytime someone moves into the neighborhood, we wonder, well, how do we... What does this mean? Is this going to disrupt my life? Is this going to change who I am and how we live? And it's remarkable how much the Bible says about this. And I'd like us to look today in our Bibles, or like me, on your iPhones. And we're going to check out the text in Luke chapter 10, verse 25. It's a familiar story. It's probably something you've heard before. In fact, I almost guarantee you've heard this before. But we hopefully will look at it through a slightly different lens today. On one occasion, an expert in the law stood up to test Jesus. We're on verse 25. On one occasion, an expert in the law stood up to test Jesus. Teacher, he said, what must I do to inherit eternal life? Well, what's written in the law? He replied, how do you read it? He answered, well, love the Lord your God with your heart, your soul, your strength, your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. Well, you've answered correctly, Jesus replied. Do this and you'll live. But he wanted to justify himself, so he asked Jesus, "And well, who's my neighbor? Who is my neighbor?" See, this is a Sunday school story we're about to enter into, isn't it? You know, this is the next story coming up is the story of the Good Samaritan. It's easy to hear this story and to hear almost these words, once upon a time. But it's important that we see that the story actually disrupts. It's it's not necessarily a story for children. I mean, children can get something from this, but there's something that each of us today can also gain from this. Let's think about the context. A Bible college professor comes to Jesus and asks a question. A teacher in the law. And he asks an important but fairly common question. It's a question that you've asked in your life before. He asks, well, what do I need to do to have eternal life? Another way that many people ask this question is, well, what's the point of it all? We've all asked this question once or twice. What's the meaning of life? How does this all matter? Jesus replies quite quickly, love God, love others. It's the answer. Pretty good. It's easy. It covers the basics. Well, not so fast, the man asks, because he says, well, what do you mean by others? So who are those others anyway? And verse 29, the man asks, so who is my neighbor? I mean, there's the neighbors we know, and then there's neighbors we don't know yet. The neighbors who live next door for the last 20 years, and the neighbors who are moving in. People that are familiar and people that are unfamiliar. What do you think about when you think about your neighbors? It's those people next door in your city, on your block, but also those ones across the tracks, the ones on the other side of the street. We're good at tolerance, but you know, even with all of our tolerance, we have these misconceptions about others. I found this out the hard way, about a year and a half ago, when I wrote an article about Africa. I traveled, as I mentioned, extensively, and one of the things I find interesting about people when they talk about Africa is that they have these misconceptions. And so what I did is I wrote an article where I listed my favorite facts about the country of Africa. Now, it was controversial, and I knew it when I wrote it. Full disclosure, I intended it to be satire. I was writing it as a joke. In fact, as I was writing it, I sent it to some African friends of mine, Jade and Julia Kenyamanyara. He's a Kenyan. And I ran it by him. He lives in Tanzania. I'd put them on the field years ago. And I said, Jade, I need to ask your opinion. Is this like really, really racist, what I'm writing here? And he said, yeah, of course it is. You're white. But no. He said, no, it's fine. Go ahead. Just put it out there. See what happens. So let me be clear. I wrote a series of outrageous statements about Africa that were absolutely untrue. Every fact I made was made up. Every quote was imaginary. Every fact, in fact, I put on there had a web link that led to the exact opposite information. And if you're curious, you can, if I get a little long-winded, you can go to stmleader.com and just click Africa facts or something like that. You'll find it. If you leave a comment during this time, though, I'll know. You know, it's all right. So I posted it, and I'll, lots of people said it was, well, they really enjoyed it. But they had one problem with it, is that most people missed the joke. If you remember a moment ago, I said Africa is my favorite country. And a lot of people focused on the fact that, well, Africa is not a country, of course. Europe is not a country. Africa is not a country. Africa is a continent. And so a lot of people objected to my geography, but they ignored a lot of the other things I said. And one of the things I said was that the favorite sport of an African is war. And tripled the number of people died in Syria last year than in all the African wars combined. But like that was okay, because we have this image of what Africa is. I said that there's no natural resources on the continent of Africa. And any of you have a phone on you? Yeah, you've got African resources in that phone right now. Coltan, which runs it. I don't know what it is either. I said that the place, Africa, was discovered and invented by settlers in the early 18th century. It was absurd. It was crazy. But people focused on the wrong thing. They missed the forest for the trees. They focused on the fact I said the word country instead of continent. And we can do that, can't we? We can focus on a stranger, and we can focus on the wrong thing sometimes. We can focus on the neighbor across the street from me, who I found out yesterday was Evan's cousin's property. Well, they have renters there, and they always have loud parties. So maybe you could put in a word, you know? And so I focus on this crowd across the street and their loud party as opposed to actually getting to know any of the people inside the house. I do that. We focus on their appearance and what they wear sometimes. And we think, well, I don't know if I can relate to that person. Cultural, interesting clothing. Some people say, so why'd you write the article anyways? And some people said it's because, well, you just like to create a fuss and stir things up. But the truth is simply this. I wrote it because I've spent enough time in Africa where I've met enough African men and women. And I've realized that most people know about Africa, but they don't know an African. And that's a pretty substantial difference. Because knowing about is not the same as knowing. And I think it's important for us to realize that when Christ calls us into relationship, he doesn't call us to know about someone. He calls us to know them. So who is my neighbor? The teacher of the law asks. And for those of us who want to know the story, Jesus continues and he says, well, once upon a time, a man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho when he fell into the hands of robbers. We're in verse 30 for those following along. They stripped him of his clothes, they beat him, and they left him for dead. Priests happened to be going down the same road when he saw the man. Well, he passed by the other side, and a Levite, when he came to that place and saw him, he also passed by the other side. Well, what do you do when you see a problem you just can't fix? You know you can't deal with it. There's no end of suffering in this world, and you look around and you say, I can't change the suffering of humanity. You can almost hear these two asking the same questions. Is this man my responsibility? That's what this theology professor, this pastor did when they came to this person. Maybe they believed, well, maybe he did something wrong in his life and this is something he deserves. Maybe their theology had him punished by God for this. And maybe they're just busy. Maybe they're off to visit the sick or write a sermon or they needed to make it to prayer meeting on time. But whatever it was, they walked past the man. In a life filled with suffering, filled with all kinds of manner of problems, we start to wonder what it is that we're responsible for. Years ago, I had the opportunity to visit South Africa. Pastor George, and this is from South Africa. We came up with a new name for Pastor George yesterday, by the way, too. If you want to, we were talking cross-cultural, and so it's he's now Jorge for everyone here. Yeah. So I think he'd appreciate it if you just referred to him that way from now on. But years ago, I was traveling into South Africa, and I was there, and if you remember the story of South Africa, it was this moment where it changed from a place of apartheid and separation into a place where suddenly the nation tried to reconcile its wounds and come back together. Nelson Mandela was freed. And a few years after that fact, I met a man named George Snyman. He was a white South African. He worked in IT. He'd grown up in his nation as a person of privilege. He'd heard of this terrible situation of the other people in his country, and he knew the story of poverty and illness and death and the terrible problems that they faced, but he knew it in an intellectual way. And frankly, he didn't know it in an immediate way. He didn't have black friends. He was a white South African, and he lived a life of separation. And so he tells me that he justified his separation like many of us do. You know, those HIV, AIDS was a horrific event at that time. And he says, well, HIV is terrible, so why don't people just stop this risky sexual behavior? If people are so sick and dying, why don't they take care of themselves better? Why don't they work harder? How come there's so much violence against each other? And maybe this was the same reasoning of the pastor and the theology professor as they walked by the road on the other side of the man. What can I do? I'm no paramedic. I'm not a nurse. Where are the cops? What can I do? It's a feeling we all feel. And so George felt the same sense of frustration and this desired change, and he didn't know what to do, and he didn't know these people, and he didn't know their problems, and he decided to make a change. He left his computer. He kissed his wife and his children goodbye for a while, and he left them know that he was going for a walk. The walk went on for a while. Hours into days, in fact, days into weeks and months. He didn't stop. He walked across the bottom of his continent. And over these months, he visited hundreds and hundreds of people. He was introduced to AIDS not as this concept, not as a social issue, or even just a disease, but as men and women with names that he got to know. This is what it means when a neighbor drops by. Not knowing someone as an idea or a concept, but knowing them by name. Excuse me, I'm dealing with a little cold here. Verse 33, but a Samaritan. See, this is where this story takes a different tack. We've heard this story 1,000 times, haven't we? And this story actually jogs a little bit here. This isn't the Sunday school story anymore. A Samaritan. This is no longer a G-rated story in the listening ears of those listening to Jesus at this moment. This is an R rating suddenly. Samaritan. Why did Jesus choose a Samaritan for his story? Well, he intended shock. A Samaritan. What was a Samaritan to Jesus? What was a Samaritan to the people around them? Well, a Samaritan was, yes, a stranger. It was an outsider. They didn't have the same religion. They lived in different communities. They were different. They were enemies. You wouldn't stop to help a Samaritan. If Jesus was telling us this story today, he might have told us the story about the good ISIS Muslim. But an ISIS Muslim stopped. This would be the impact of the people listening to this story for the first time. A Samaritan. He's telling the stories of enemies, people not of our faith, people who are against us. A Samaritan, as he traveled, came upon where the man was, and when he saw him, he took pity on him. He went to him, and he bandaged his wounds. He poured on oil and wine. He put the man on his own donkey. He took him to an inn, and he took care of him. And the next day, he took 2 silver coins, and he said to the innkeeper, "Look after him. And when I return, I will reimburse you for any expenses you may have." Did Jesus just say what I think he said? Is ISIS the hero of the story? I mean, in a world that we live in today with bombings around the world and problems and Paris and all of these horrible, horrible things, this was bad. This was bad. This was bad theologically. This was bad emotionally. This was not the kind of story designed to win friends and influence people. This was not happy, gentle, rainbow Jesus riding on a dolphin, kissing babies Jesus. Jesus wanted to reveal something different in this story. See, remember, Jesus, who has his standing in front of him, it's a theologian asking him these questions about eternity and the meaning of life. And this man is thinking hard about things that the man should be thinking hard about. Who's in? Who's out? He's focused on this concept of who it is that I should be in relationship with. He's picking apart the word neighbor. And Jesus says, let's break that. Because the mission of Jesus always intends to change the natural order of the universe. See, the natural order of the universe is clear. What goes around comes around. You get what you deserve. What you reap, you sow. Some people refer to this as karma. You read it all through the Old Testament. He says, that's just the natural order of the universe. But Jesus comes in and he says, let's break that. What would it look like if suddenly we didn't give everyone what they deserve? What if we changed? What if we came in with a new way? Maybe there's another path. This way of grace that Jesus invites us into. George Schneeman listened to the words of Jesus, and he eventually made his way back home, but his walk with his neighbors changed him. He asked an interesting question. What if all of these stories about Africans as lazy and bad parents and don't care about their children, what if they're just not true? What if they had it all wrong? What if every single visiting mission team from all around the planet were asking the wrong questions? And instead of outsiders trying to fix the impossible, George met the people and he knew to start to ask a fundamentally different question. He started to ask, instead of, hey, what do you need? He started to say, who cares for the orphans here? And he started to meet the people. He met the go-gos, the grandmothers, the women who tirelessly care for the lives of children from their own children who had died. He began to see the community through a different set of eyes. Instead of seeing the lack and the need, he saw the capacity. Instead of seeing the weakness, he saw the strength. Instead of seeing the sense of giving up, he saw the tenacity to continue. And that turned on the light bulb for Jesus, for George. Caring for the sheer number of HIV orphans was impossible, so he began to plan to care for orphans without orphanages. He began to seek out new ways to find local systems and to use the skills and the abilities of the community. Instead of seeing the families as overwhelmed and exhausted, he saw them as the heroes in the story, because this is the way of Jesus, to take the hero, to take the enemy and turn him into the hero. George began to mobilize local volunteers and simple community resources. And today, children are kept with their extended family at 1/10 the cost of what it would cost to put them into an orphanage. Tens and tens of thousands of women and children are cared for in this new community. And why? Because George decided to meet someone not as an idea and as an abstraction, but as an individual. What if you don't get this, that what you deserve? Jesus asked. And George answered, "What does the way of grace look like?" Continuing in our verse today, which of these three do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of robbers? The expert in the law replied, "Well, the one who had mercy on him." And Jesus said, "Go and do likewise." Oh, I love the idealists, don't you? You know, the people that listen to those words and they say, "Huh, I wonder if I could live them. What would that look like? Go and do likewise." Trevor Green lives in Vancouver. He's a journalist, and he wrote about the men and women of the downtown East Side. He talked about people who are forced into poverty, into drugs, and the sex trade. And he would introduce himself. He'd sit down for coffee with them, and he'd learn their stories. Maybe that's why he was doing this. He also worked as a Canadian reservist, and because he was so familiar with learning people's stories, maybe this is why he was doing what he was doing that day, as he visited this little village in Shinkay, Afghanistan. He had left his family at home. His little girl, Grace, was only a year old, and he'd come around the world on a mission on behalf of you and I and our government. He's a captain in our military, and he was doing what he always had done. He was sitting down, talking to strangers, making connections with the enemy. He was discussing a clean water initiative with village elders, and he sat there in the heat and the dust. He had a cup of tea in his hand, and it was hot, and he took off his helmet as a sign of respect to the elders in this community. That was then when a 16-year-old boy crept up behind him with a stone axe, hit him on top of the head, and split his head wide open. His brain fell, but he survived. How do you recover from this? Slowly, evidently. Slowly, he made his way back to health. He's relearning how to walk, relearning how to take care of himself again. How do you recover trust from this? I would think that would be very difficult. Slowly, he recovers trust. And if there's anyone who has the right to hate his enemy, I think it's Captain Green. But what's more remarkable about the story is that he has said that he's long forgiven Abdul Karim, his attacker. He says, "I believe that if Abdul had learned to read, he might have understood a different message rather than the distortions of Taliban ideology and hatred." See, for Captain Green, this man, this boy who hit him, is not a radicalized Muslim youth. This boy who hit him, his name is Abdul. He knows his name. He doesn't just know his general description. And when Jesus said, "Go and do likewise," he stepped into that relationship with someone who is his enemy. And that's why he's a hero. This is why in November last year, he was given an honorary doctorate at University of Victoria. Because he went and did likewise. Because anyone can go and sit with a person that they know well. It's not a hero's work to introduce yourself to someone that you like, but to drink tea with your enemy. Captain Green reminds us that it is our enemy who is also our neighbor. And this is the way of Jesus. go and do likewise. They're simple words, really, but I think if they just stay words, then they don't really matter. So what does it mean for us today to go and do likewise? For some of you, I want you to consider these words because I think they're powerful words. I think the words of Jesus matter. I think the ways of Jesus are significant for today, and I think that they still hold relevance to the way that we live our life. And maybe for you today, you've been living a system where it goes around, comes around, and you're saying there's a different way to live. And this is the way of grace that Christ invites you into. And it's a way that I've attempted to situate my own life towards. And it's the way that people in this place have decided to walk towards as well. We are going to listen to the words of Christ, and we're going to try and follow in his ways, be accepted into this brand new way of life, this life of the ages, this life eternal. And I encourage you, if you've never considered that before, to consider that today even, to say, maybe this is for me today. Maybe you've heard it all before, but I want to say that today might be your day for you to consider what that would look like for you to join in this way of life, to go and do likewise for others. Maybe for some of you, you're wondering, well, no, I've followed in this way of Christ for a number of years now, and it's now time for you to consider what it means for you to discover the stranger. Maybe it's around the world. I'd love to participate with you and talk with you a little bit further about what that might mean for you. To help you to find places and to enter into this incredible opportunity that I've had in my life to go and to discover and to be part of other people's stories around the planet. There's nothing like travel to bring you into that story, to find out what Christ means by inviting us to find the stranger somewhere else. And I know that this church is looking at mission, and there's some exciting new things coming up, and you got to get ready. Because there may be an invitation for you to participate in that mission, to discover the stranger on the other side of the planet. And maybe for some of you today, it's mission just around the block, to find out the stranger that lives next door. Maybe you have been that curmudgeon and you haven't said hi. Well, at least go outside, and the next time they're there, you know, just wave. Doesn't take much. Or maybe you've been waving for a while, and maybe it's time to go over and say, hey, we're having a barbecue. We'd love to have you in some way. Maybe it's mission around your own block. Maybe it's time to see the familiar story and to see it through a new lens. You know, instead of seeing the stranger as, well, just that person over there that I don't relate to in some way, to start to say, well, what would it look like if I was engaged with this person in some way? To meet the stranger and to realize who they are. Because when you meet the stranger, it changes your life. I want to share one final story as I conclude today, and it's just this story of a volunteer I put on the field in the Dominican Republic a few years ago. His name is Dave Chapman, and he's an artist, and he helps out with a bunch of children's issues in this community. And he lives in Dominican Republic, and anyone knows the geography there. It's a country that shares an island with Haiti. There's two countries on this one island. And there's a lot of animosity and hatred and problems between people in Dominican Republic and Haiti. And people in Haiti are the poor people on the island. They're given the menial jobs, and they'll often try to get into Dominican in order to make some money, but they're not treated very well. A lot of tensions and fighting that happens back and forth. One day, David was down at the river. They just spent a long day doing some work, and he brought a bunch of kids down to the river, and they were just playing in the river. I asked him if he was in the river. He said, no, it's too dirty for me. But, you know, all the kids were having a great time. And he saw, coming down the path on the other side of the river, these two little girls in pigtails and, you know, clean, bright black shoes and white socks and skirts, little Haitian kids on their way to school. And as he watched them come down the river, suddenly he saw something, made his heart kind of pound a little bit. He saw these two big Dominican Republic kids go over, spy them, and they started to talk. And they started to rush over to these kids, and he waited for just another fight. And his fears were compounded when he saw them suddenly grab these two kids and lift them up and pull them out into the middle of the river. And then continue on to the other side and drop them off. These little kids had just realized that these two little girls needed help crossing the river. Didn't want to get their school shoes wet. And he said, my years of assumptions about people needed to come to an end again and again and again as I started to see what it looks like when we engage with the enemy as our neighbor and how we can participate in their lives. So we close in prayer. Father, your kingdom invites us to know the enemy as our neighbor. And when we were finally introduced to you, well, you are part of that introduction because we were your enemy. And you invited us into a relationship and you asked us to enter in and to be part of your life. And you would be part of our life. And as we enter into that relationship, we find that we get to know you. So Father, I pray that for some of you here, as you meet that first moment in there, that first introduction, I pray that there would be people here today who'd be introduced to who you are. For others, Father, of us who have followed you for maybe weeks or months or years, Lord, as we follow you, let us know who that other is in our life. Lord, I pray that even right now, as people are thinking about these words and considering them for themselves, that they would think about the people that surround them in their own life. And they'd say, well, yeah, maybe he's my neighbor or she's my neighbor. How can I get to know them? What would it look like for me to engage with them? Because knowing about someone is not knowing them. Lord, we ask this in your name.